This is episode number 757 of the Secret Identity podcast, and today in What's New, we're going to talk about the unfortunate and untimely passing of Carrie Fisher and her mother, Debbie Reynolds, as well as some more positive news around Tales from the Con, Riverdale, and some upcoming shows. Our comics this week will be Justice League versus Suicide Squad number 1, Green Arrow number 11, DC Superpowers number 2, and Prowler number 2.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you!
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
And welcome, everybody, to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendry here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing better than I have in the last couple weeks because I was sick.
We took a week off because, frankly, you needed the rest and relaxation. It was the holidays. We both had stuff going on. We really tried to get together last week and put a show together, but it would not have been of any quality at all.
No, it wouldn't have sounded good. I feel like I have a voice back. It's not necessarily the voice I want.
Yeah.
But my throat's been scratchy, and it was interesting. I went to the doctor.
You look great, though.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I went to the doctor, and your hair looks great, by the way.
Thank you.
You got a cut?
Looks I got good. A cut again, yeah. I like to keep it short for the winter, you know?
Went to the doctor.
Nice, good, short winter cut.
There we go. I went to the doctor. I said, I got a flu. And they said, no, you don't. You've got just a cold. And what is happening is the cold, that strain that's going around, is worse than a flu going around because it goes right to your sinuses or your lungs. And I have weaknesses in both, so started going right into the lungs and got on some Z-Pack.
Yep.
Here I am now feeling better.
Well, that sounds wonderful. I can't wait to get that in about a week.
Z-Pack.
It's going to be fantastic.
They had
the Z-Pack didn't do anything for me. I don't know if we – I'm sure we talked about our old man sicknesses, but
yeah.
I was sick from like the end of May through the entire summer and still haven't completely gotten rid of the thing that I had. And they put me on the Z-Pack. They put me on all these antibiotics. And then eventually they were like, yeah, we can't put you on anything else. You just have to ride it out.
Yeah.
Because apparently those colds and different viruses that have been going around are like long-term.
Yes. Yeah, like these are holding on.
Yeah. They can take weeks and months to actually go away. So, yeah. So, good times. Well, looking forward to more of that. Well, obviously, we would be remiss if we did not start the show because we did not record last week with talking about Carrie Fisher's passing.
Yeah, that was sad.
I mean, and then a day or two later, when her mother passed away, it was, on the one hand, like, not shocking.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, completely heartbreaking.
The sad part, or the shocking for me, was the fact that I didn't know Debbie Reynolds was still alive until she started, or her people started tweeting about how Carrie's doing, you know, much better, and, you know, we're hoping she's going to make a turn. And it was literally a day later after those statements that she passed away.
Yep.
So I didn't even know her mother was still alive, but it made it sad. It made it very poetic, you know, that whole kind of thing, because they both looked exactly alike. I mean, I remember Debbie Reynolds growing up because my parents were huge fans of Eddie Fisher, who was her dad, and Debbie Reynolds and her music and the movies. And so for me, when I discovered Carrie Fisher with Star Wars, it was like, oh my gosh, that's their kid. So I kind of realized that growing up, but I put a thing up on our website about the fact that she was mine and probably every boy from 45 and up, their first crush.
Well, and the thing that kills me now is that her daughter, Billy, who not only lost her mother, but then lost her grandmother within the span of a couple of days. I mean, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I mean, and especially when you think about how they got to be in The Force Awakens together. They got to actually be part of that, you know, this thing that she grew up knowing that her mother was such this big part of this big iconic thing, and then got to be part of that herself.
Yep.
And, but I can't even imagine that level of loss. Like, it's just earth shattering.
Yeah.
And so, you know, clearly we could spend an entire show talking about what a loss that is. She is in, because they had already filmed the next Star Wars movie. it's the one after that that they have to, you know, come up with a plan for. But I think what I'll remember most about Carrie Fisher is who she was today, who she had become, mm-hmm. her frankness and her honesty in talking about what it was like coming up as an actress, what it was like being this, you know, icon to teens, what it was like dealing with, you know, sexism and ageism in the film industry and the things that she had to power through and the role model that she has been her entire career and evolved into different sort of versions of over her career is just amazing. And to have our sort of last, you know, version of her being General Organa mm-hmm. is pretty awesome.
I'm so glad we had that because I, like you, I think I remember thinking back to when we were at a show in New York and we would remember we were at a show and we saw her and we were hearing her and she didn't necessarily sound at her best. And she's had a lot of drug issues, very public. And I think this was kind of at the time when it was really starting to come to a head. This was at a Big Apple show maybe 15 years ago. And up until she popped back into the Star Wars world, that was my last memory of her. And to be able to have that, to have the picture of her hugging Han at the, you know, before he took off is what I'm remembering. And I remember seeing the Blues Brothers just because she was in it.
And
I had no desire to see that movie.
She was amazing in that movie.
She was awesome. And there were a lot of movies I went to see just because of Star Wars character, you know, people were in it. But she was somebody I always was looking out for. And she was in was it Neighbors with Tom Hanks?
I believe so, yes.
She just did a lot of great stuff. And not to mention the fact that she was a award-winning author as well.
Yep.
You know, Postcards from the Edge. That was her stuff. She did the one-man play on Broadway, which I would have loved to have seen because
right.
that was where she just poked holes in everything, but a sad, sad loss.
Yeah, and obviously our thoughts are with Billy Lord at this point because that's just a tremendous amount of loss. So, that is some very sobering news to start the show with. And I feel like we're in the era now where we are starting a lot of these shows talking about the passing of someone that we, you know, grew up loving for whatever reason. And I don't think that's going to end anytime soon. 2016 was just one heck of a year for losing, you know, cultural icons. And so hopefully 2017 does not continue in that same vein.
So far we've gone 3 days in, 4 days in, and, you know, knock on wood.
Well, don't jinx anything. Don't jinx anything.
Yep.
Let's move to the positive, though, because I was very excited last week to read about a project that our good buddy Chris Giarrusso had been a part of. Some of you may have been familiar with Tales from the Con.
Very good stuff.
That was a comic strip that started with Brad Geiger and Chris Giarrusso over at the Emerald City Comic Con website. And Chris was on it for a while, and there was another artist that eventually came on at some point. But this went on for 4 years, this strip, and they were hysterical.
If you're a comic goer, if you're
a con person,
everything hit you.
So in very exciting news, Image is going to release a $9.99 trade paperback collection of Tales from the Con, the con-focused webcomic for the Emerald City Comic-Con website. This 112-page volume will collect every strip written by Brad Geiger with art by Chris Giarrusso and Scott McMahon that has been published online 4 years' worth, plus unpublished strips and bonus material. Image has previously published 2 comic format collections, each with 1 year of strips. This will be the first one that captures all of them.
Sign me up.
$10, dude.
$10. I am telling everybody right now that's listening, please order it. You will not be disappointed at all.
Oh, it's hysterical. And
it is.
And the great thing is that Chris's trademark humor and just works so well with Brad Geiger's trademark humor. And then when you add in Chris's style, it is, if you have read any of his G-Man stuff, if you read any of the mini Marvel stuff, like, this is so in his wheelhouse that I remember picking up because they had floppies of, I think, like a number one issue of a bunch of the strips and stuff like that. It's just perfect.
Yeah.
Like it. So that's great. I'm glad that it's getting that collection. So that's really exciting. And then in other news, you have the Riverdale television show premiere date.
We are, I believe, and I wrote it down as the 16th. I don't think it's the 16th. I believe it's the 27th. But
so
anyway,
now you're just making stuff up. So you actually don't have news. You have fake news.
Yes, I have fake news. So about 3 weeks from as we're recording this, and this is a project that we were hearing about a year and a half ago. And to actually see a trailer for it, to look at the cast, KJ Apa as Archie, Cole Spruce as Jughead, Camila Mendez as Veronica, Lily Reinhardt as Betty, Luke Perry as Archie's dad.
Now, Cole Spruce is Cody, right?
I'm not sure which one it was because I screamed to my daughter. I'm like, Becky, which one was Cole?
She goes, it was Cody.
She said he was one of the Nelsons, which shows you how much that music is now ingrained in my kids. And Ross Arthur as Reggie, and he's freaking Reggie. That kid is Reggie.
This show has a bit of Twin Peaks to it,
yeah,
which is very exciting to me.
Yep.
And it's got a bit of CW teen drama to it, which may be a turnoff to some people, but I've enjoyed most of the shows that they put on there, and a little bit of Supernatural to it too.
And there is a Supernatural feel to it.
Yeah, so I'm down for that. I mean, we were going to watch it anyways, but now I'm pretty excited for what that show looks like it's going to become. So I can't wait for that. That's a mid-season premiere, and it's something that is coming along at the perfect time.
Yep, we need it. We absolutely need it. I'm very excited about that. And some shows that we get to talk about coming up April 1st and 2nd, GamerCon at Mohegan Sun. It's our good friend Mitch Halleck.
Connecticut GamerCon, the first annual from the guy who brings you Terrificon every year.
That guy.
Yep.
You see the pictures of his new dog, by the way?
Adorable.
Harley, oh my gosh.
Adorable.
Freaking unbelievable. August 18th through the 20th, we have Terrificon at Mohegan Sun so far. The only guest I saw up there, George Perez. Oh, you don't need anybody else.
You don't. Not if you're looking to sell tickets, because that guy is one of the nicest people we've ever met at a show.
We had a blast. We met with him like 2 hours before the show.
Super fond memory.
Yeah, and he's like, yeah, I just got here because, you know, they want me to be here. They're paying me to be here. I am here for the fans. And it's like, you have a horrible attitude, mister. Get out of here.
That picture that we have with him is one of my favorite pictures that we've ever – because we don't take a ton of pictures together. But that particular one is just fantastic.
So Super Mega Fest, April 7th through 9th at Marlboro, Massachusetts. This is a great show. Jim Shooter so far, Mike Grell, Barbara Eden, Shirley Jones, me. You can go to supermegafest.com to check this one out. It is at it's the new home of it, which is in Marlboro at the Comfort Inn. And it is a great place. It's a huge, wide open spot. If you're a creator, you probably should look at getting a table there. It's not like it was at the castle where you were kind of piled in every nook and cranny. I had a show where you had to move me to get to the light switch and the heating vents.
Yep.
So this is not like that at all. It is a huge area. They have great people, and we're still 4 months away, so the list is going to get piling up. And a show that I raved about last year and can't wait for, May 6th through 7th in Poughkeepsie, New York, Hudson Valley Comic Con, the second edition. It's at Gold's Gym in the Exhibition Center. And what they do is they take over every square inch of the health club there, of Gold's Gym. You have vendors and people out on the soccer field. You have everybody on the basketball court. It is an amazing time in a small town that was starved for geek anything. It was like when the first few years we did Vermont, people just want that. And they had a great time. Right now, there's no guests listed, but Al Mitra and Jerry Klein, I think, are going to be there again this year. And you just go there and have a ton of fun. For information, you can go to hvcomiccon.com. Tables are available, and tables are very, very good price. So check it out. Great people put on the show.
And I'm trying to look up the dates right now because Keith just posted this the other day, but Plastic City Comic Con is returning again this year.
Get out.
And it is going, for those that don't know, our good friend Keith Gleason from Reckless Sidekick and our good friend Amy Kukta, they put on an amazing show last year, a fantastic show with wonderful creators. That was the show where I interviewed Veronica Fish, but our buddy Chris Giarrusso was there. Joe Caramagna was there. If you want to see a show that is basically a secret identity high school reunion.
It absolutely is.
I mean, basically, that's what that show is. And it was so much fun. And everybody that we talked to at that show did absolutely fantastic in terms of creators being able to sort of make their table money back. It was free last year, for a complete free admission. And I know that this year's show is going to be $2 for adults to get in. And it is free for kids again. So $2, it is happening. Are you ready for this, Matthew?
I'm ready.
Saturday, July 29th at the Wallace Civic Center in Fitchburg, Massachusetts. Kids 12 and under are free. The entrance fee is $2. And if you're a creator looking to go, I believe it is $50 for your space if you bring your own table, and $80 including table and chairs, which is still very reasonable prices for creators. So if you're a creator and you're looking to just have a great group of people around to talk shop with all day and hang out with. And the crowd response was very good last year. That was a super fun show. So we will definitely be going to that. We are very excited about that. And it's at a new venue this year.
It's a hockey rink.
Yeah, because last year, although it was managed very effectively,
yep,
it was pretty clear last year that A, there were going to be more creators that wanted to be a part of it, and B, that the crowd was going to be even bigger last year,
yep,
because everybody that came there was remarking all day, I'm so glad they brought a comic show here. Like, this is really great. There was something for everyone. Even though it was comics focused, it hit to all fields and had, you know, some craftspeople there. I had my books there. We were doing the podcast there. We had just a ton of the other authors there and things mm-hmm. like that, and just a ton of great stuff, toys, games, that kind of stuff. So can't wait for that. Lots of good shows. It feels like as soon as we turn the page to the new year, the show calendar starts to fill up.
And I am excited because that's a show I've been looking forward to. And
yep,
we talked about doing that sort of same model other places, so we'll keep an eye out. And you may have a show popping up near you, so
who's
you
to
never
say?
Know.
Who's to say what happens? Now, well, I'm going to pause the show for one quick minute, Matthew, and ask you, are you rubbing your feet together under that table?
Moving around a little bit.
Okay, because what? You can hear that so clearly on the microphone.
Yeah, you know,
it sounds like your feet are about to burst into flames.
So
like you are literally a Boy Scout starting to put two sticks together and rub them as hard as you can.
So I'll keep them apart. But the problem is I always wear shorts. I'm wearing sweatpants because I'm kind of sick and not feeling that well.
Uh-huh.
And it's the rubbing of the sweatpant
material
together.
That's exactly what's happening right now. So I'm going to ask you to
refrain, stop,
to still your body. And we are about to talk about comics, but first we're going to talk about beards. I have to take an update picture because I have not shaved my beard now since early September. And I finally remembered it is Blood Moon.
Yes.
Blood Moon is the VikingOilsLLC.com. You can go there to get that. But it is the Viking Oils oil that I use, Blood Moon. And I'm almost out. I'm getting a little nervous now. And I am going to have to start using that beard balm, that the one, because usually what happens is you take the beard balm.
Yep.
I take the beard oil. However, my beard's kind of out of control now. It's entered full on, this guy probably just walked out of the wilderness sort of phase, which I like because I'm not an outdoorsman at all. So this kind of lets me project that I might be. Like people see me and they're like, oh, that guy must love hiking and he must love being up in the mountains.
That guy can get his way around pro bow shop stores.
That guy likes sitting in his room with the door closed and reading comic books. But you don't have to know that.
Yep.
You could think I'm this big outdoorsman. So yeah, so it has been a savior because the weather now is getting very cold and very dry again. And that usually means a lot of dry skin. So VikingOilsLLC.com, that's where you want to go to order your beard products. And a big shout out to those guys for just supporting us over the past couple of years.
Yeah.
Our little show.
I'm going to talk to Gary. I didn't see him yesterday. Usually our paths will cross at least one day since we don't work together on the same shift. But I didn't get to see him because I want to talk to him about what is some of the new stuff he has. There was a guy at work that was saying to me, look at my beard. It's getting all – it's my friend John, the one who recommended the Superman Annual.
Uh-huh.
Was saying that his beard, he needs a little bit of a comb, a little bit of a brushing. So I said, you know Gary – look on the website. So he's looking to get a comb or a brush, something to kind of make it look a little bit nicer. And not that it doesn't look nice now.
Sure.
But he's also looking to get some of the oils. I said, you need to check these things out.
Mine's getting long enough where I'm going to be able to start braiding it pretty soon.
You are.
I'm excited about that because I'm going to an Anthrax concert in the near future.
That's right. They're playing.
Overkill is coming in March. And I got some metal shows to go to, and the beard plays well at the metal shows.
It does.
I can't grow the hair long anymore, but the beard plays well. So excited about that. But I'm also excited to talk about comic books. One last thing I will mention, and I will do a segment on this at some point in the near future. I had put a thread up on the Facebook page and a post up on our website about what did you get for Christmas? What did you get for Hanukkah? What did you get for Three Kings Day? What did you get for a holiday present that is comic related? And we want to hear about it. And a couple people have posted already, but I'd like to see what other people received for their Christmas holiday because I got from my cousin, which was totally amazing and completely unexpected. He bought me the two coffee table editions, one of the DC Universe Encyclopedia and one for the Marvel Universe Encyclopedia, both of which have over like 1,200 characters in them each. And they are just gorgeous, amazing encyclopedias of awesome characters. So I was thinking, like, maybe from time to time, I'll bring one of the books on the show. We can read an entry about an obscure character and learn about that. Maybe if a character shows up in a particular book or something, we can read an entry about that particular character. That's awesome for me because my knowledge, especially of some of the more obscure DC characters, not that great. And it's cool now to have that because usually when Parker and I are watching the TV shows and he's like, oh, who's Wild Dog? And I'll be like, oh, hold on. And I'll go in my phone and look up Wild Dog on Wikipedia. I just break open the old DC encyclopedia now and check it out. And apparently they get updated every year or every couple years. And so these are the brand new versions. So I'm super stoked about that. So if you got a cool comic related present for the holidays, then post on the Facebook page or on our website and let us know because I will read the list that we have so far in not next show, but the show after it.
Cool.
So we're going to start off today with an event that I'm sure a lot of people are excited about if they've been following DC's Rebirth, and that is Justice League versus Suicide Squad.
Yes, I read the prequel a couple weeks ago about building up into this. Now, I am not somebody that necessarily likes these team-ups because for the most part, they're always forced. They always feel like, look, we just got to get these people together. We got to somehow make this work, make it happen. I got a little intrigued by it. And the buildup about this being the first major event of DC Universe Rebirth, it got me a little curious. And when I read the preview, I completely just got sucked right in. So we're starting out in Death Valley, California, by the way. Let me start with the creative team. I probably should have started with the book and then gone into the creative team because, once again, oh, you know what they do, too? They make it like a movie, which is huge.
Uh-huh.
They give you the two-page splash. We've got Joshua Williamson, the writer. Jason Fabok is the artist. Alex Sinclair colors. Rob Lee is the letterer. You've got a couple different covers. My cover is the Batman getting ready to punch Deathstroke right in the face, which is perfect. So we start out with somebody walking down the stairs, walking towards a couple guards, saying, hey, good morning, gentlemen. And guy's saying, hey, authorized personnel, sir, you can't come in here. And he's like, well, I really would rather you just let me in so I don't have to kill you. And then you see the guys go down dead. And as he walks in, he's going up and there's a person at a console and the console's like, hey, what are you doing here? And he goes, well, I want you to release the prisoners. And he's like, you can't do this. And you see that this is sort of a high security system in a prison where there is like 10 little drawbridges going out to these cocoons where there's some villains in. So you're assuming they're going to be some bad ones. This person is in here trying to get out the bad guys. And the lights go out, more soldiers come in, and this guy just takes them all down. You see a sword, a flaming sword come out, which makes you start thinking of who it could possibly be. And a head gets lopped off. You see this green beam come flying out and take out a bunch of dudes. You see some vines wrap around some people, and it sucks the life out of them. And you have this poor doctor who is watching this whole thing going, don't do this. I did what you asked. And he goes, oh, yeah, you did. You helped me out. You opened him up. And then he kills him anyway. And then you see in the smoke, you see eight figures kind of come walking out. And now you go to Badnasia, which apparently is a rogue nation in the DC universe. And you've got the Suicide Squad in there fighting a bunch of soldiers. And this is going on. And you have, I think one of the things that I really enjoy the most and always have about Suicide Squad is when the battles are going on, you have Amanda Waller constantly in their ear. Like, what's going on? Why are you doing this? Why is this happening? And she's doing that right now. And you have, but you're also having these guys screaming back at her going, you know, what the hell? Why did you send us on a mission like this? And you also have somebody in there going, why did you send them on a mission without me? And you see that it is Colonel Flagg came walking out going, why are they on a mission without me? I thought I was the boss. And she is saying, look, I needed these people to go in there. We've got Killer Frost with the team right now. So let's just see what they can do. Plus, I don't want you to be involved because if it goes bad, they're going to tie you to the American government. And that's going to cause a big issue right there. So as this is all starting to go down and fall apart and just go south real quick, they start to kind of get a little bit of a handle on things. They start the Suicide Squad kind of pushes back a little bit. And then you're having all the dialogue between the two where you have got, you know, Captain Boomerang having some chat with Killer Frost and being kind of, you know, rude to her. And she's snapping back. Harley Quinn saying, you know, you better not talk like that. You better watch out. You better not do that. And then you find out that when they're trying to get in, you see that they get to like the gates of the castle of the president of this country. And when they get there, you have a guy who looks, he's got a skull face, he's holding on like this big orb, and he's saying, oh, great, last act on Earth, you guys are going to be here, and you're going to be a, your souls are going to be a gift to our God. Now you turn the page to Batman hanging out with the Justice League, saying, I got to kind of tell you about this group called the Suicide Squad. And they're explaining what's going on, and they're all saying, how could this have happened? We don't know anything about this crew. And he's like, well, I did. I knew everything about them. I know what's going on. I know what's happening. And then you have the rest of the Justice League going, not really thrilled about that. I'm not thrilled in the fact that you seem to know all about this team of bad guys, yet you didn't say anything to us. And he's like, well, you know, up until now, I didn't think it was really important. Interesting thing that you notice in this book is when this is going on, it's pretty much Superman sitting to the side, not getting involved in this. Superman is kind of the new guy in the group. You really see the fact that he does not quite feel comfortable throwing any authority around, which is some of the one of the things I really love about this whole new Superman thing. He's not in there, I'm boss because I'm super strong. He's letting everybody else just take the lead on things.
He's pretty much starting over.
Yep. And you have everybody going, you know, saying, look, how can this possibly be happening? And how many, who are the villains she's got working? And he's like, well, you've got Captain Boomerang. He's like, oh, yeah, this team is horrible already. You don't even have to tell me anybody else.
So I would argue that it's awesome already.
Yes. So everybody's getting all bent out of shape about the team, and they're saying, all right, so something is going on right now, and we need to maybe get in touch and reach out to this team. They find out that this team is in a rogue nation, and they show up as the building, as everything is starting to really go south. Deadshot is up on the roof. He shoots the guy with the skull face who was talking about how, you know, their God is going to be happy with their offering. And as he is saying this, Deadshot is screaming at Waller, saying, you basically have sold us out because this is a no way we're going to get out of this mission. And I don't believe that you did this to us. So they're all talking about, why don't we get out of here? Why don't we just scatter, end the mission, abort the mission, we'll get out of here. And they're talking about the fact that if they leave, their heads are going to blow off. And a couple of them are like, look, why don't we just take our chances with that? We aren't going to make it. And as this building starts to collapse and cave in, the one that Deathshot is on the roof of, he starts to jump off. And as he's jumping off, he's saying, see you in hell, Amanda. And then all of a sudden, Superman catches him. And he's like, yeah, not happening today. Don't worry about it. So as they all land, they start arguing. And you know, the teams are all lined up as much as you would want them to be perfectly. And the thing is they're looking, going, you know, Batman's like, look, best thing you could do is stand down right now. And all of a sudden they start math and they're like, you know, hard pass, Batman. We're not going to do this. And they start going back and forth. And all of a sudden you have Green Lantern going, do you guys even realize how one-sided this is? Why don't you just give up right now? Because there is no way that you're ever going to get out of this. And Boomerang mouths off to him. He makes fun of Boomerang. Boomerang starts to get all bent out of shape. And then all of a sudden you have Amanda Waller saying, yeah, I just saw that the Justice League showed up. What are you guys going to do about it? And he's like, well, what do you want us to do? She says, you take on the Justice League or you're going to die. And then Deathshot goes, all right, well, here's our orders. We fight. So now you have a fight going on. And the pairing off turns out to be a little more evenly matched than you might have thought it would be. You have Batman, who is fighting the Enchantress, who he is vulnerable to magic. You've got Batman fighting Deathstroke. You've got Killer Croc fighting Aquaman. Killer Frost is fighting Cyborg, Flash and Boomerang, and Wonder Woman and Harley Quinn. And as this battle is going on, you see in the Swiss Alps, there's a chalet there, and they're talking about this guy saying, well, you know what? I wanted to do some damage. I needed to get the right team together. So I think I picked the right people. And you're seeing this team, but you're only seeing pieces of each person. And when you finally see who it is, it's Dr. Polaris. It's the Emerald Empress. It is Lobo. It is Johnny Sorrow, who is one of the coolest characters. He has one of those red masks that floats with no face. It's almost if Psycho Pirate didn't have a head on.
Yep.
And you've got that. You've got a guy named Rutson, who I don't know anything about. And he's like, okay, here's the mission. We are going to kill Amanda Waller. And you see this person in the shadows who's kind of narrating this, who broke him out of prison. And then you turn the page, and so they're like, so what's in it for you? And he says, me? I'm going to save the world. And you see it is none other than Maxwell Lord.
Ooh.
So we have not seen Maxwell Lord in an awful long time. That was a huge shock because you've got to realize that the first issue is going to have some sort of shock to it,
right?
Something to get you back, something to get you fired up. And having Maxwell Lord in there, somebody who has a nasty history with the Justice League, he created the team, sold the team out, and then in one of the worlds got his neck snapped by Wonder Woman.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be very interesting to see how this whole thing plays out. But as an event, as a comic book, it is perfect. And few extra pages, $3.99.
Well, I am going to stick in the DC Universe and talk about Green Arrow number 11. This series has been great so far, and it has one of my favorite artists on it right now that I am super-duper excited about. That is Juan Ferreira, who you probably remember when I was raving about Colder.
Yes.
Which was a Dark Horse book that was absolutely beautiful. But he's doing the art, color, and the cover on this one. Benjamin Percy does the story. Nate Picos does the lettering. And there is Andy Corey is the editor of this book. Now, what's happening in Green Arrow is that basically Ollie got screwed out of his own company of Queen Industries. And the guy who was like the chief financial officer is the one who is kind of running things now. There was an intercontinental railroad that was built that is taking its maiden voyage. Now, this thing goes under the ocean and it's going to end up arriving in Seattle. And there are a bunch of diplomats on there. And what's happened is Green Arrow and Diggle and Black Canary are on this train that is speeding underwater. And it's kind of like, remember in Jaws where they walked through the aquarium? Jaws 3D?
Jaws 3D.
Yeah, the aquarium thing like that. That's what the train tunnel is like.
Oh, wow.
Under the ocean. So you can look up and see the ocean around this
Wow.
entire train track. So it's speeding, this high-speed train is speeding through this underwater tunnel. And you have an assassin who was hired to kill an Arab diplomat on this train.
We have to mark that down, too. This is probably one of the first times we ever referenced Jaws 3D.
Most of my references go to some sort of 80s horror movie. So he, in fact, did kill this guy. And now Green Arrow is being blamed for it. And so he and Black Canary and Diggle are now racing through the train cars trying to find this assassin. And he is making his way up to the conductor. And so as that's happening, you see that there are security guys that are trying to stop them. Black Canary uses her canary call to take them down. Green Arrow doesn't want to kill anybody with his arrows because they're mistaken that these guys aren't the bad guys here. But you see the assassin has made his way up to the compartment where the conductor is, and he ends up killing that guy. And now he's gotten himself outside the train, and he's kind of broken the brakes of this thing. And so now the train is kind of out of control and the whole thing is going to destroy itself. And this guy just wants to get out of there. And so he gets on top of the train. So you have this amazing scene where he realizes the only way he's going to get out of here is to cause the tunnel itself to start collapsing. And so he does that. He detonates this thing that puts a big crack in the tunnel, and now the water starts pouring down. So the tunnel itself is starting to cave in as this thing is speeding through it. There's a car of the train that has cars on it, so the assassin goes and grabs a car. Now he's speeding down the lane next to the train as the train's speeding alongside him. It's like something out of a James Bond movie. Mm. And the whole thing is in the, by the way, the thing is called Murder on the Empire Express. And so you have this high-speed chase that is taking place from train to car to motorcycle when Black Canary gets her hands on a motorcycle. They're all speeding through this tunnel that is leaking now and about to collapse. And they are barreling towards Seattle, where at the train station, there is a bunch of people and media waiting to celebrate the maiden voyage of this thing. And this train is going to take all of them out. And so it's completely out of control. And the way that Juan Ferreira is drawing it is just absolutely astounding. Black Canary is skidding through the water on her bike as it's splashing everywhere. And Ollie grabs onto the back of the bike and the two of them are speeding after the killer. And there's just these great pages where, and I'll show you one, Matt, where the tunnel collapses and you can see a shark fall through the ceiling as they're speeding through. What I was blown away by with this issue, because there are actually a couple issues ahead of this now, is the way that the action is drawn. You feel it. You feel the speed. You feel the explosions. And then it cuts to the Trans-Pacific Railway Station West in Seattle, where it's nice and calm and everybody's kind of getting ready. And this guy, Mr. Broderick, he is the the guy from Queen Industries now, who's kind of screwed Ollie and taken over things, and he is planning for that diplomat to be killed. And so what he's planning on happening is the train's going to arrive with all these diplomats. One of them is going to be killed, and all of these peace talks that are going on are going to go down the drain. And that's his big plan. What he did not plan for is that the train is actually going to be barreling off the tracks. And so you have Diggle, who has made his way up and is trying to figure out a way to stop this train. And the only thing that he can do is get it to, like, jump. And so they end up coming into the station, and you've got the assassin goes flying by in a car. You've got Black Canary and Green Arrow that go flying by on the motorcycle. And then you've got the train itself that comes flying by. And the way that it jumps up, it sort of lands on this big dome that was surrounding the station, and it lands in a way that the majority of people do not end up getting killed. There are plenty of injuries and stuff like that, but it's a lot better than it could have been. And so Diggle kind of piloted it to as safe of a crash landing as it possibly could have. And so they end up crashing. People are getting rescued. You have someone who looks very much like Hillary Clinton talking about how the peace talks need to go forward because they're not going to, you know, they're not going to bow to this terrorist situation that has just occurred here. And so the plan of Broderick has been completely foiled. And as he's cursing what just happened, you have Black Canary and Green Arrow show up on their motorcycle. And they said, "We're back." And that's the way this particular one ends. And so what's been happening in Green Arrow is that Ollie is trying to get control back of his company, and he's also been caught up in these other things that are going on that are much bigger than Queen Industries, but that Queen Industries are involved in. So it has been a really, I think, action-packed and almost, like I said, James Bond-esque opening to this series. And through 11 issues, I feel like there's been a ton of action. It's been a really fun ride. And if you enjoyed the TV show, and that's your introduction to Arrow, and that's kind of your getting into Arrow, I think there's plenty here for you to like. You've got Diggle in a big role here, and you've got Ollie, and the Ollie that you see is kind of the Ollie that you would recognize from the show. But if also you're sort of a traditional Green Arrow fan, I think there's a lot here for you to like as well. Obviously, Black Canary being here is really cool. And the last time that I read Green Arrow consistently, it was when it was Green Arrow and Black Canary, and Mike Norton was drawing it at the time. That was the last time that I was really on a Green Arrow book, but this one I have been on from the beginning, and I am loving it.
Very nice. In the same world, but a little bit different, and that is Superpowers from DC. This is number two, and this is Franco and Art Baltazar.
Yep.
And these two, they could draw nothing, and I will pick it up. I love everything that they
do. Just a whole book of nothing.
Yep. We talk about
how put their names on the front.
We talk about how Chris Giarrusso's art just lends itself to making you feel good. Anything that he does, it's just perfect. And I think Franco and Baltazar are the same way. If I could have my way, my house would be covered with Chris and Art and Franco's pictures everywhere, bed sheets and curtains with them.
But you know what I think it's overlooked a lot of the times is that that style, that's great. And there's been plenty of companies that have done, you know, mini versions of their characters and stuff like that. And there's other artists that do that kind of stuff. What I think about these two guys and about Chris Giarrusso that is very consistent is their writing,
yes,
I think, is even better than their artwork.
I agree.
So they have a great style and a cute style and sort of a charming style, but their humor is just, it's just in that perfect sweet spot of, again, being very enjoyable for adults and for kids as well, and just super, super well written from a comedic standpoint. Like that's one of the things that blows me away about Chris all the time is how truly funny the stuff that he writes is. And it's the same with these guys.
Yeah. And with these two, anytime they do these DC books, it's a love letter. You know that they love the characters and that they're giving you just a different take on a character that you love, they love. They throw enough in there for the adults like me to read to get something out of it. And a young kid could read this and love it for a completely different reason. So what had happened is Superman got caught by Lex Luthor, and Lex Luthor was kryptoniting him. And he had him at the Fortress of Solitude. And he is kryptoniting him, so it is now he's getting overpowered. He's screaming at him. He's like, "Oh, Krypton's mightiest alien, defeated by Earth's greatest criminal." And this is so much like the Gene Hackman Lex Luthor, the dialogue He's sitting there just going off. Then Wonder Woman shows up, grabs Superman, gets him out of there, and says, you know what? I'm going to take Superman from your evil grasps. And, of course, how does a villain answer? Curse you, Wonder Woman. And then they go off. I'm sorry. They were in the Pacific in Lex Luthor's sort of it was like the Fortress of Solitude, but it was made out of kryptonite. So now Wonder Woman brings him up to his fortress, lays there. Kara shows up. Streaky shows up. Crypto. So they're all there and they're like, oh, what happened? They said, well, we're going to put Superman here. We're going to let him rest. And while he rests, he will be able to be fine. And, you know, we're just going to have to take care of all the bad stuff. And you see in Central City, this big cloud opens up. And all of a sudden, one of my favorite DC, I should say, one of my favorite villains of all time, strictly for his look, shows up out of that thing. Composite Superman Batman.
Yeah.
I love him. I don't even know what he does.
That feels like a Batman villain, doesn't
it? Man, I remember seeing that in my dad's old comics and being like, oh, my God, that's the coolest thing ever. I don't even think he does anything.
Uh-huh.
I have a figure of him. I just love the look. So he shows up and he lands, and the first thing he says is, boo. And that's even classic. So everybody is on each side of him. And, like, you know, so people that see the Batman side are like, oh, Batman's here. Everybody's going, oh, Superman's here. Flash shows up and says, you're not Superman. You're not even Batman. What's going on? And he grabs Flash and says, I know what your weakness is. So where's the Kryptonian? Now you see in the city of New Krypton, in the city of Kandor, you have Jor-El and Lara who are alive and they're waiting for a baby to show up. And General Zod shows up and they're like, out of the way, Zod, we got somewhere to go. We're going to have a baby. And Zod's like, oh, great. You're bringing a new life into New Krypton. How cool is that? He's like, look, what do you want? He says, well, I'm here to warn you. The spirit of my old friend, or I should say our friend, is kind of around and upon us. And he goes, well, I don't know how you escaped the Phantom Zone. And you see inside the Phantom Zone that is where all the Kryptonians went when Krypton blew up. That's where Jor-El took Lara and they were there. But while they were there, they all got fused with Bizarro's DNA, because Bizarro was a computer system created to sort of run Krypton. So he is now running through the DNA of everybody there. So Jor-El gets mad and says, get out of here, and he leaves. And they're like, oh, he's like, oh, see you later. And he says, well, Jor-El needs to know about his child, and if all goes well, I think your family will be just fine. And you see Bizarro walk out and he goes, what are you talking about, your family? And he goes, well, you'll see. So back in Central City, Flash is fighting the composite Superman Batman. Batman shows up. They start fighting him. And then all of a sudden, the sky opens up again and it is Superman, but he's a mummy. And he's got a question mark instead of a logo.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So they're asking him, they're like, and Flash is like, who's that? And he goes, well, that's the unknown Superman from the future. And Flash is like, I guess. That's,
sure, yeah.
We'll just take it.
Not the weirdest thing I've seen today.
So then we go back to the Fortress of Solitude where Kal-El is waking up. He's feeling better. He's all ready. And he's like, wait a minute. I hear a disturbance. Central City needs us. So they take off to go to Central City. And on their way, when they get there, they see the composite Superman Batman. They see unknown Superman. Unknown Superman grabs the composite, grabs him, takes him back to the future where he belongs, and he will be in jail forever. And now they're saying, well, how would those people get here? And they're saying, well, we don't know how they got here, but we just need to take care of them. And then you turn the page and you see that back on Krypton, Jor-El is outside waiting for the baby to be born. And a nurse comes out and says, hey, your wife and baby are fine. It's a boy. And he goes, however, got to explain something to you, that when you were in the Phantom Zone, your son's Kryptonian DNA has been altered as well and sort of created a new thing by Brainiac. And so Jor-El's like, well, what's wrong with him? He says, oh, she says nothing. He's healthy. He's got good color. It's just that he's green. And then you see that it's a baby Brainiac that was born with a spit curl, which is awesome. And the story is to be continued. So what has been a lot of fun about this is this intertwining of a lot of that new Krypton stuff that Geoff Johns brought in that I don't even remember what happened to it. Bottle City of Kandor, composite Superman, Batman, Krypto's there, just a great thing. And then throwing Supergirl in there and calling her Kara, I just think was the right little touch to do.
I mean, it also sounds like they're kind of delving into pretty deep storylines for a book like that, you know, which is cool.
Yeah, I thought, like, at the end I read it and I went, I hope, like, some six-year-old isn't going to run to his parents and go, where babies come from? You don't want this to be the catalyst of what springs
well,
on
see,
the baby
when you have
talk.
This software program.
Yes.
All right, well, I am going to jump over to the Marvel Universe for my final book of the day and talk about Prowler number 2. And the reason I picked this book is because it features a character that I was very excited to see the return of. So if you remember, Prowler is a guy who, Hobie Brown, who has been working with Spider-Man for months now. He has sort of been a guy who, and he used to be the Prowler, who started off as a villain but then sort of turned into a good guy. And he has been covering for Spidey when Peter has to be either at an event where Spider-Man needs to show up as well, mm-hmm. or when Peter's out of the country or stuff like that through Parker Industries. And so what happened was he was sent by Peter to go investigate New You, which is the company that is behind all of the cloning that's going on now and this technology to bring people back from the dead. And he was killed when he went to investigate this stuff. And he was brought back as one of the Jackal's New You clones. And he has to take that medication every day in order to keep from starting to sort of fall apart. And so he is now working for this guy because kind of A, he has to, but B, after the Jackal had sort of told him what his plan was, the Prowler is on board with it. Now, we know from what we talked about in the last episode that the Jackal is none other than Ben Reilly. And Ben Reilly, in a great issue of Spider-Man, which I'll probably talk about in a couple of shows, we see why he's done what he's done. But what we know right now is that Ben Reilly is the one that has used this technology to bring people back from the dead. And that's his goal, ultimately, is to bring back Uncle Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to get Peter to work with him. And so he brought back Prowler, and Prowler is now the head of security for New You. And so he sent Prowler up to Alcatraz because there has been someone that's been trying to hack into the computers at New You, and the signal is coming from Alcatraz. So he goes up to the old prison, but he ended up getting captured. And you see as he wakes up in issue number 2 who he was captured by, and it is none other than Julia Carpenter, who at one point was Spider-Woman. And I loved when she was part of Forceworks and she could do like the psychic spider webs and stuff like that. But in recent years has become the new Madam Web. She is the one now who gets these visions of the future and things like that. But what we also know is that the Jackal has resurrected the old Madam Web. So who knows what happens here? But you have Julia who captured this guy, and she knows who Hobie is. And she's saying, you know, what are you doing here? Why are you digging around this place? And he's kind of fumbling through an explanation, and she's showing him what she's got going on there. And she's basically got almost like an Oracle's lair. She's got all these computers. She's been doing all of this investigation into what's going on with New You. And as they're talking, you know, she still doesn't know that he's really working for them until he destroys the internet connection. And she's like, what in the world are you doing? I was really close to locking onto what I needed to. And he says, look, I don't want to fight you. Just give me time to explain. And before he can explain, the two of them start fighting. And she's kind of getting ready to kick the crap out of him, and he's trying to explain to her, just listen, I can explain why I'm doing this, and a New You is not all that bad, and all this kind of stuff. Meanwhile, back at New You, you have all the villains that the Jackal has brought back who are fighting amongst themselves, and Jackal is asking the new Electro, where the heck is Prowler? He's supposed to be here keeping these guys in line. I thought he'd be back from the thing I sent him to do by now, but he didn't come back. And so you have Electro, who is now the female version of Electro, who goes down and sees Madam Web and sort of beats out of her where the location is that Prowler was sent to, and she's going to go retrieve him now. And she's kind of a loose cannon and can't really be trusted and doesn't like Prowler. And so that's not necessarily a good thing. So back at the back at Alcatraz, as Jessica and or as Julia and Prowler are fighting, he's kind of explaining to her, look, I'm working for these guys now. What they're doing is actually a good thing. They're not the bad guys that you think they are. You should come work with us. If you come with me to New You and I show you what's going on there and you can talk to these people, like, you'll be on our side. Like, we can change the world. The technology that they have can bring back whole bodies. It can bring back organs. People can regrow limbs. Like, this is the medical breakthrough that we've been waiting for, and they're not bad guys. And she kind of listens to him. And at the end of it says, look, you said yourself, because she gets a vision that Madame Web is back. And she's like, how is that even possible? And he's saying, well, it's possible through this, you know, this technology. And she says, you know, I don't trust this new you place. I'm not going with you. I'm going to find out what's really going on there, and you need to get out of my way. And she flips a switch, and all of a sudden the room fills with gas, and he ends up not being able to find her, and she gets out of there. And as she leaves, he starts to realize that he hasn't taken his medication for the day. And so he starts to get a little bit weaker, and the decomposition starts to kick in. And it's at that moment where the new Electro shows up and says, oh, what do we have here? And she sees him in his weakened state, and you know things aren't going to go that well. Now, this book is written by Sean Ryan. It is Javier Salteras does the layouts, Jamal Campbell does the art, and Corey Pettit does the letters, and the editor is Devin Lewis on this one. And so it ends with Prowler being in sort of a compromising position with his new rival, basically. I'm liking the story so far. I love the fact that Julia Carpenter came back. If Madame Web is going to stick around now, because we don't know how the clone conspiracy stuff is going to play out. Are these new clones going to fade away at the end? Are some of them going to stick around permanently in the Marvel Universe? If Madame Web is back, what does that mean for Julia Carpenter? Does she go back into the heroing business as a member of the, you know, spider family, so to speak? I don't know, but I am interested in that. I think that her becoming Madame Web was an interesting twist, but they really didn't do a lot with that. So I'm hoping this is just one way or another, her re-entry back into sort of the mainstream spider family stuff, because I'm excited about that. The artwork in this book did not blow me away, but the story has been enough to sort of keep me there. And I don't know if this is going to be a full ongoing or if this is just sort of a series that's going to last as long as Clone Conspiracy does. But if you like Prowler as a character, if you are digging the Clone Conspiracy stuff, then this is a nice side story.
Very nice.
So there you go. That is your group of books for this week. That is going to do it for this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. So for Mr. Matthew Herring, this is Brian LaHenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.